This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. According to most major polls, or combination of polls from around the country, the presidential race between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is a toss-up with Election Day nearly here. But we've heard this story before, and the reality may very well wind up much different than what the polls are forecasting. So what are we supposed to believe this time around? Can we trust the polls, and why do they even matter? This week, Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon sat down with University of Delaware Communications Professor Paul Brewer, Delaware Politics Director at UD's Center for Political Communication, to discuss polling projections and which numbers we can trust.
A new CBS News YouGov poll is showing that Kamala Harris is leading Donald Trump nationally with 50% compared to Trump's 49%. The latest 538 ABC News poll is showing Harris ahead by no more than a single percentage point. And in a separate analysis just from 538's daily election poll tracker, Harris was slightly ahead in the national polls, leading Trump by 1.4 percentage points. And there are fewer state polls than national polls, so we have less data to go on there. But most state polling data in swing states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, they're showing a very, very tight race with Harris or Trump holding on to marginal leads. So taking a step back, when you see or hear numbers like that, what is your first thought? What do you make of them? What's your thought process look like there in terms of how you interpret polling data?
Yes. So in some races where there's maybe not even very much polling, like in Delaware statewide races, for example, there are very few polls, but the margins are so wide that unless something shocking happens, we can be pretty confident in making predictions about what's going to happen. In the national presidential race, it's the opposite situation. There are lots of polls done by lots of different organizations using different methods of varying quality. But the big picture is that these polls are so close that we can't really look at them and make a confident prediction about what's going to happen. It's kind of like an uncertainty principle here. When the polls are this close, it doesn't really mean that much when a candidate is 1 point ahead or 1 point behind in polls like this, because the margin of error is bigger than that. If you take all the polls and put them together, it can sometimes give you a clearer picture. If you take all the polls over the past few weeks and put them together, in this case, they still don't clear the picture up very much.
Yeah, well, and I do want to follow up on that. In terms of, as far as how these polls are put together, then the criteria, you know, when people see these headlines or see it on TV, read these news articles, that criteria, it's rarely you're seeing it listed. You know, we don't really hear about sample sizes, the minutia kind of gets lost in those headlines. And I think it'd be safe to say polling these days has become almost akin to punditry, at least I think in a lot of people's minds. I think it can be confusing and it causes a fair bit of anxiety heading into election day. So for you know, whether it's national or statewide purposes, how are these polls like put together, broad strokes? What kinds of factors impact polling there?
Yeah, so there is a science to it. Historically, the way pollsters did these election polls is you would do a telephone survey, you would do probability sampling, kind of random sampling's popular term. And typically how they do that is they would randomly fill in the last four digits of phone numbers so that they could get unlisted numbers. And pretty much everybody had a phone. And a few decades ago, people weren't inundated by junk calls and spam calls, so they're more willing to talk to pollsters. So you might get response rates of traditional telephone polls like 20, 30, 40%. That's all gone downhill over the past 20 or 30 years. So now response rates are in the single digits, even for very well done polls. It's a lot harder to get. You want a sample size poll like this, like 1,000 people would be a good sample. That might seem small compared to a country of 330 million, but a representative sample of 1,000 people can tell you a lot about the voters' preferences. But getting that sample of 1,000 people is really hard now. And so a lot of pollsters have moved to online sampling. That's a challenge because it's harder to make sure that you're getting a kind of a random distribution in your sample because you have to get people to opt in. it's just tougher to get a hold of people. People are less willing to talk to pollsters because they're worried that pollsters might be scammers. You have campaigns that pretend to be doing polls, but what it really is a lead-in to trying to persuade people. So it's just a really tough era in the public opinion polling business for jobs like this. And so the polls are more expensive, but they're harder to do, and it's trickier to make them accurate these days.
When we look back at what's happened recently, specifically polling in 2020 and then during these past midterm elections, do those help inform or foreshadow polling accuracy for 2024? Should we read into those past numbers to inform what might happen, what we can expect this year?
It's tempting to do that. A little history here. So in 2016, the polls were off. And so if you just looked at the polls, the prediction you'd make, not a really confident prediction, but the best guess would have been that Hillary Clinton would have won that election. But what happened was the polls were off, and there was a trend in how they were off. So they tended to overstate Clinton's support. And so you look at polls now and you say, oh, it's really close in Pennsylvania, it's really close in Wisconsin, it's really close in Michigan, it's really close in North Carolina. The likelihood is that those states will all break in the same direction because of something we call correlated errors. So if we're wrong, we tend to be wrong the same way across different states, across the country as a whole. So that's the best guess as to what happened in 2016. Now, it might not have got as much attention in 2020, but the polls in 2020 overestimated Biden's support a bit too. We just didn't hear about that as much because the polls got the big picture answer right, that Biden won. And so people didn't really dig as much into the details of, but they still overstated Biden's support a little bit. So now it's tempting to say, oh, well, the same thing that happened in 2016 and 2020 is also going to happen in 2024, but it's more complicated than that. One thing is pollsters look at what happened before, and some of them try to correct for that. For example, they've tried to I should talk about weighting. So, if you do a survey, you might get a sample that doesn't really look like the public. Say it's got more women than the American public does as a whole, or fewer people from the South. So, pollsters will weight these polls. They'll statistically adjust them so that the sample looks more like the public in general. And there's a math to that, although from the outside, people might look at that and say, but they're messing with the numbers, but they're doing it to try to make the sample look more like the general public. Pollsters could try to weight the results based on what people said they did in the last election. That has its own dangers because when you start adjusting your predictions based on people's past behavior, you might be correcting based on the information you have, but you also are opening the door for new errors.
Yeah, well, we covered state polling a bit, but not Delaware specifically, because Delaware isn't a state that has a ton of polls. And as it was described to me recently, Delaware is a state that is not obsessed with polling. So I can imagine why that is. But can you give us some insight into Delaware polling and if it's a good thing that polling isn't a major thing here in the first state?
Yeah, so I think the big reason why I don't see a lot of polling in Delaware is because Delaware's outcomes are fairly predictable without polls, especially in the general election. So Delaware's been a pretty consistently blue state, both in presidential races and in statewide races. So quality polling is expensive. We're talking $50,000 to $100,000 for a really kind of gold standard poll. So if you have a pretty good sense of what's going to happen without a poll, who's going to spend the money to do that? And there may be campaigns are, but they tend to sit on their polling results. So we're dependent on media polls. Or University of Delaware did a poll back in September, and what it showed was races that weren't very close. So Meyer, well ahead of Ramone in the gubernatorial race. Lisa Blunt Rochester, well ahead of her opponent. Sarah McBride, well ahead of her opponent. And the margins were big enough that they're way outside the margin of error. So something big would have had to happen between when UD did those polls and now for us to expect, like some huge scandal or some earth-shattering event. Otherwise, it's not a, again, it's probability. We could always have a very shocking result in these Delaware statewide races, but with margins that big, you don't need a lot of polls to have a good sense of what the outcome is going to be.
Right, yeah. What's the point and money spent best elsewhere? Well, all this leads me to ask them, Paul, why do poll or Paul polls? Why do polls even matter then? Why should we continue to put stock in them?
You look at coverage, and a lot of coverage is really poll oriented. You know, it's basically the scoreboard of the game. If you frame politics as a game, as a sport, as a contest, as a war, it's also a pretty easy way for journalists to talk about campaigns because, one, you don't, maybe there's not as much perception of journalists being biased because you're not favoring one side, you're just telling people what the scoreboard says. Also, if reporters become experts at kind of the game aspects of politics, like candidates' tactics, who's winning, who's losing, and polls are a big part of that, that is a reporting style that is easy to carry from any one race to another, whereas kind of issues, substance, policy proposals, they're really tricky and complicated to report on, both from a knowledge standpoint and from an appearance of being biased standpoint. But also, there's some evidence that voters like reading about polls, that news stories, especially for people who are really into politics, they really want to know this information. And so there's a demand for it, and polls fill in that vacuum. I would say that polls also serve another purpose that's maybe less visible, and that is understanding what voters think about key issues of campaigns. You know, where do they stand on issues like abortion? Where do they stand on issues like immigration, the economy? What are their perceptions? What do they care about? What are their values? If we want to understand what the public cares about and why they vote the way they do, and not just who's ahead or behind, polls can also be really helpful for that.
Thanks to University of Delaware Communications Professor Paul Brewer, Delaware Politics Director at UD's Center for Political Communication, and our Kyle McKinnon for joining us on The Green this week. And stay with us. Art Playlist is next, where we learn about a Millsboro-based arts nonprofit working to educate the public about the so-called music of the Americas. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.